on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, June 30th, 2025 edition of Invest Talk, and that means this is the final show for the first half of 2025. It was a very interesting first half, and I think we're going to get more of the same in the second half, but we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about whatever's on your mind. We're going to answer your finance investment questions. We're going to bring you some actionable data and perspective that can help you make better decisions with your money. Not just today, not just tomorrow, but next month, next year, and hopefully for the years to come. That's what this show is really about. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics that we'll touch on for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, Justin. Hi, Luke. This is Kevin from Philadelphia, and I'm looking to invest in uranium miners ETF. It's URNM. It's at a 52-week high, and I'm wondering if I should wait for a pullback, or should I just hop in there since things are going up a lot in uranium. But thanks a lot for all you do. You guys have a great show, and I'll wait to hear from you. Thanks a lot. Right, bye now.
All right, looking at URNM, it is not at a 52-week high. It is hanging, it has had a nice run, though, since the lows back in March. And that was at, or actually, that was April. That was at a low of around, 27? Now we're at 47 and change at the close today. So certainly a nice run. But overall, it has been down for the last year. If I look back in June of last year, what was it trading at? Yeah, that was closer to, end of June, it was closer to $52. So it's actually down over the past year. But mainly that's because you have, this is URNM, okay? This is uranium, the Sprott Uranium Miners ETF. The issue with this is that the top holding is Cameco, which is what we own for clients. We've owned Cameco for a long time. That is at a 52-week high. That is crushing. That is doing amazing. However, you're also getting a lot of what we call junior miners. And these are names that sell a great story. That it's all about what they're actually going to produce in a year, two, 3 years from now. And there's no guarantee that that will actually happen. So what they typically do is when the market is more optimistic, shares rise like you've seen recently. What do? They go issue more shares. They dilute the shareholders. They continue to burn capital. And they continue to promise a lot. Of the top 10 holdings here, four of them actually lose money. They have negative PEs. It means earnings are negative. And one is Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, which is just owning pure uranium. So only of the top 10, only five of them actually make money. And that's the issue. Okay. And there are only 35 total holdings. So it's not like, it's not like it's those top 10 holdings account for 76% of the total assets. So half the top 10 lose money and they're just burning capital. And so that's why this ETF is down. That's why we own Cameco, because it makes money. It is well diversified. It has exposure to nuclear deployment as well, beyond just the mining of uranium. So I like the uranium space, but like most of these thematic ETFs, whether that's robotics or AI or whatever it is, I like to find the best within that space. Now, I think what these ETFs are good at is, for the average investor, is to give you a list to choose from. Or you can go, it's all public information. I'm not giving you any information. You can't go on Sprott's website or any other ETF provider's website and get, you can see what these ETFs are holding. And then you can find the best for you, your risk level. And if you want to take high risk, you can buy some of these smaller ones. And that would be probably give you, if your aim keeps going up, it'll have better returns than like a Cameco, in at least in the short term. But with Cameco, you have a certain floor, right? You certain have a certain level of sustainability of profits and cash flow, et cetera. So I rather own, we own Cameco for our clients, and I would rather own that over URNM. But as a lesson there for all of you out there, thinking about these thematic ETFs, think about gaining exposure to a slice of the market using an ETF. It can be a simple way to do it, but most often it's not the best way. It's about doing a little bit of work on your own and finding the best of breed within the space. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes, and here are some of the topics we have planned. One is in regards to what is part of the one big beautiful bill is the what are called Trump accounts. So he's labeling it after himself. And he what it's all about is providing eligible newborns with $1,000 of government-funded account, right? So it'll track an index, and we'll talk about the differences between that and 529, what's the tax treatment, and what ultimately new parents could look forward to. And not even just parents, but grandparents, aunts and uncles can think about contributing to these type of accounts. So we'll look at that. In addition, we're going to check in on the younger cohorts in our country, and it's about the 18 to 29-year-olds. Are they spending more, less, about the same? Well, we'll look at that. In addition, we'll touch on foreign investments slumping here in the United States. Is it an anomaly, or is it something that's more concerning? So we'll look at that topic. And then lastly, if we have time, we'll touch a bit on the weakening dollar and what that could mean for assets denominated in dollars, right? And we'll dig into that story. Remember that the first half of this year has been, I'm trying to remember how long it's been, but it's many decades, the worst first half for the dollar in many decades. So we'll look at what that might mean for different asset classes. We also have questions from our voice bank. One is about reverse splits. I'm going to love that one. Yelp.com, or Yelp Incorporated, excuse me. And then we have some questions that came in via the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel. So make sure you head over there, subscribe to that channel, and check out some of our videos. We're putting out more content that you can't get on the podcast. So we just started that last week. So if you want exclusive content, we are posting more and more on our YouTube channel. So don't forget to head over there and subscribe. You can do that on your phone if you have the YouTube app, etc. Now, that's what's on the topic. That's on the docket for today. But we always welcome your topics as well, your finance and investment questions. So don't hesitate to reach out and ask us. We're going to head to a short break. And on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity and take your questions on the Invest Talk Anytime listener line at 888-99-SHARK.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Wanted to get your take on W.W. Grainger Incorporated.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
The market is starting to price in an increasing likelihood that General Mills is just headed for bankruptcy.
Commodities are incredibly volatile, so when the going is good, take some profit.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
My name is Mike. I'm calling in from Orange County, California.
And this is Lewis calling from Bolivia.
Let's go talk to Chris in Maine.
So don't forget to call Invest Talk.
First off, great show. I learned a lot from you too.
888-99-CHART.
No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the cachava shakes come in 5 delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate cachava's whole body meal shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my cachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, cachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those 5 indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every 2 scoops of cachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Cachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try cachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with cachava. Go to cachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's cachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com. Code INVEST for 15% off.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. And now Justin Klein is here and taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Let's go take a look at the market today. It was a nicely positive day overall. You had the S&P up about 0.5% or so, and the NASDAQ kind of same, lagging slightly. But overall, a nice day. You had some nice strength out of Apple, up over 2% on the day. Google was down, Amazon down, Tesla down. Those were really the main losers overall. Nvidia flat, Microsoft roughly flat. And kind of a mixed bag in some of the sectors. Energy was down, continued to be down with you had oil, WTI down a bit on the day. But really, it's about the dollar. The dollar continued to be weak. This is on the back of what looks like continued pressure from President Trump to have Jerome Powell cut rates. And a pretty clear indication that whoever the next Fed president will be is someone who will lower rates dramatically. Maybe down to 1%. Remember, that's the short end. So that doesn't mean that mortgage rates are going to drop or the long end's going to fall. That could be something different. But what you are seeing is a stagflationary environment. You did see the, what was it? The Chicago PMI? Let me pull it up here. Yeah, Chicago PMI. It missed expectations. 44.2 was the expectation, and it came in at 40.4. Remember, anything below 50 is shrinkage. So certainly not doing well on that front. You had prices paid climbing 8.3 points to 84.8, the highest level since May of 2022. So what that is indicating is that inflation is ready to reaccelerate in the back half of this year. And, you know, the indications from the Fed is that, you know, they're not looking to tighten policy. They're actually looking to loosen policy and maybe a little bit this year and more aggressively next year under whoever the new Fed president will be. And so that's really pushing the dollar index down. The Dallas index came in at negative 12.7, consensus negative 12. So it's another indication that the economy is weakening. Bottom line, the hard data is starting to follow with the soft data was saying a month or two ago, kind of post-Liberation Day. This is something that everyone was kind of waiting for, right? The surveys, that's the soft data, right? When you talk to people, talk to business owners, and they say, how are things, you know, what's activity look like? What's the job market look like? What's inflation look like? Those are surveys. Those are soft data. Then there's eventually, at some point, if the soft data doesn't improve rapidly, the hard data starts to come in. And that's what you're getting right now. Okay. And, you know, there's a lot of headlines around trade deals and optimism there and the passing of the, looks like it will pass the big, beautiful bill. And certainly the market closed at an all-time high. This is a bit surprising, but you know, with liquidity remaining abundant, and I kind of said that going into the year, the first half of this year, liquidity is likely to remain relatively robust. Now, you had the big Liberation Day kind of scare, and you still have, I think, a lot of policy overhangs that's really driving the economy, you know, into a worse position. And, you know, the question is, usually it will manifest when liquidity actually dries up, and you're not quite getting that yet. And so, once again, I still think that will happen in the back half of the year. As you get deeper into the back half of the year, I think those risks to the market become more pronounced. But for now, you know, the technicals are fine, even though the fundamental data on the economy is not showing up to support the current prices. So that's why I remain neutral. This is kind of a neutral year for me. I said that coming in, we're going to have a choppy environment, and that's exactly what you have seen. Now, what else did you see today? The dollar, like I said, down 0.6%. Treasury rates were down. Treasuries overall were up, and that's because of, once again, pressure on potential rate cuts. And gold finished up 0.6%, so that continues to remain strong. WTI, like I said, down 0.6%. Bitcoin up 0.4% on the day. So that was the market today to end the first half of 2025. Now we're moving into a break. Still to come, my focus point and more answers to your questions. So I encourage you to call right now on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk downloads have now surpassed 61 million. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today is about the Trump savings accounts that are in this one big, beautiful bill. And it is designed to incentivize people to have more kids, to support the new children that are born between January 1st of this year. So yes, this would include anybody who, you know, had a baby in 2025 and December 31st, 2028. So between that time frame, January 1st, 2025 to December 31st, 2028. Now, to qualify for this $1,000 that the Department of Treasury would deposit in a tax-preferred investment account, your child would need to be a U.S. citizen, and parents should have Social Security numbers. Now, how does this work? Well, first is it would track some sort of an index. I would imagine it's the S&P. I'm imagining this is lobbying from BlackRock or those that are, you know, big into the index business, which mainly would be BlackRock. And it means that it's similar to a 529 or a Coverdale education plan, but there are some differences. The main one is in a 529 or a Coverdale, you can choose your investments. This you would not. You would just track an index. And families would have the option to contribute up to $5,000 of post-tax dollars. So it's not a write-off, just like a contribution to a 529 plan. So $5,000 post-tax to build the fund. Okay. And you can make contributions up until your child is 18. But at 18, they would be eligible, the child would be eligible to withdraw half of the funds for qualified expenses, eligible expenses. And mainly that is higher education expenses or credentials. So this includes trade school type of spending, basically on education. So the good thing is it does broaden out a bit beyond just higher education. So trade schools would be good. At 25, they would have access to all the funds in that account for more eligible education expenses or to start a business. So that's kind of cool, kind of seed money for a business at 25. And then at 30, you can take it out for not only higher education, not only starting a business, but also down payment on a home. So the good news here is that it'd be kind of automatic. It would be free to start for a family, get that $1,000. And over time, you can continue to add to it. And that will give a nice nest egg for a child to pursue their dreams and maybe get a leg up on life through education, through starting a business, through down payment on a home, et cetera. Overall, I think it's a pretty good idea. I think there should be more ways for us to incentivize new parents because of our birth rate is very, very low in this country. And obviously, you need more people over time to grow the economy and sustain the country. Now, what about the tax implications of this? Now, first is any contributions you make to the plan, once again, are not tax deductible. Same way on 529s. But some 529s, from a state perspective, have incentives. So there could be a difference there depending on what state you live in. If you live in a state that incentivizes contributions to 529 plans. Any distributions made for qualified expenses fall under the long-term capital gains rate. So it is income, but it's long-term capital gains. But if you withdraw money for any other purpose than what's qualified, the government taxes it as ordinary income to that child, as well as an additional 10% penalty on top of it. Okay. So that's kind of the downside there, is taxable once the money comes out, whereas 529s, as long as you're spending it on qualified expenses, you're good there. So I still think in many ways, 529s are a bit better than this. I like the flexibility of down payment on a home and starting a business. That's great. But if I'm doing it more for education, focusing on paying for education for a child, you can put more in a 529 plan, as well as it has better tax features than this type of account. And flexibility on making investments more than just tracking one particular index. And then once again, the state tax incentives if you live in a qualified state. So that was the overview of what looks like is ready to be put in place, is this one big beautiful bill. Now, this was before the Senate came in and made some changes. I'm not sure yet. You know, based on this final ruling, right, came out today or passed today. I'm not sure how many changes have been made to this, but this is the basics, basic framework, and we'll see how it evolves if this does get finalized. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic: 4 key questions to consider before allocating crypto in your portfolio. To make informed decisions about adding crypto ETFs to your portfolio, investors should weigh various factors, including diversification and volatility. That story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein, and we're taking your calls now on 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
'25 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. And also take a live call. We're going to talk to Sammy in San Francisco looking at Pinterest.
Hey, Justin, thanks for taking my call. I would like to get your opinion on pins. Do you think this is a good time to get in?
Okay, well, Pinterest has had a bit of a rally. It's a name that did very, very well during the pandemic. And, you know, business has, you know, right-sized to a degree. But they're getting back to earnings growth, which I like. Earnings this year is supposed to go up 27% and next year 17%. And those estimates are moving higher. So I love that. The free cash flow is right around $1 billion per year, which is also near an all-time high. So they really bounce back from kind of the slowdown post-COVID and are showing some nice signs of life. Great balance sheet, only actually have net cash in their balance sheet of about $2.5 billion on a $21 billion market cap. So about 10% of their market cap is just in cash on their balance sheet. Enterprise value to, let's see, enterprise value to EBITDA is pretty high, so I don't love that part. Price sales around 6, that's a little elevated. What are they doing with their cash? Because that is good cash flow. I would imagine they're buying back shares. That could be what's sparking the, they're buying back shares a little bit, not in a dramatic fashion. Let me go take a look at a chart. What are you liking about it? What's bringing this to the forefront for you?
Yes, I heard from somebody that this is kind of an overlooked stock. Not too many, institutions have actually bought it, and there is a good sort of upside to this. But I was just calling in to see what your view is in terms of, how the stock is currently priced, or should I wait a little longer, or this, you think this is a good time to jump in, given everything that you just said, right, has been, looking good.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest issue is the chart. It actually is still not looking great, making a series of lower highs and lower lows. So it's still in a downtrend on the daily and the weekly chart, and it's overbought in the short term. So this wouldn't be where I would pick it up. It hasn't broken any downtrend lines of the upside or anything like that. So the technicals are not lining up quite yet. Now, I do like the business return equity on 50%. That's very good. I like a clean balance sheet. I like the analysts are upgrading earnings estimates, et cetera. So I would keep this on my radar, but I would need the technicals to improve a bit more. And until then, I'm not getting too excited about it because usually those trends stay in place and the trend is in a downtrend. And so I'm keeping this on the bench, once again, on the watch list because of the quality of the balance sheet, because of the quality of the profitability of the business and that nice free cash, that nice cash flow. About a 5% free cash flow yield, which is good, but it's not amazing or anything like that. So until it improves on the chart, I'm going to pass on Pinterest. Thanks for the call. Let's keep things moving and play another fresh question from the InvestTalk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin. I had another question today on Yelp. Ticker is YELP. Really nice. I was looking at it. It seemed interesting, especially if consumers are going to be more picky on where they're spending their money in the near future. Not sure how to look much into how they make money. It seems like they get a lot of money from other businesses who pay to advertise for them. So maybe if you could touch on that too, and then what you thought of the company moving forward. I'll listen on the show, and thank you.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, that's the main way that they make money is through advertising. And it's a business that's been fairly up and down. It lost money in 2020, as you would imagine, with the shutdown, but bounced back to making 50 cents the following couple of years, then $1.35 in 2023, $1.88 last year. And so it's to earn $2.14 this year, up 14%, and then up another 25% next year. So the earnings trends are nicely positive, although revenue growth has slowed. It was in the mid-teens in late 2023. And now last quarter, only 8%, quarter before that, only 6%, quarter before that, only 4%. So in the last few quarters, you're at a 6% roughly growth rate on sales. But it's tech name and certainly can have operating leverage there. And the return equity is around 20%. So that's pretty positive. Also, has a ton of cash on its balance sheet. I like that. Free cash flow, $270 million on a $1.8 billion market cap. That's a very strong free cash flow yield. So I'm talking about a 15% free cash flow yield. I do like that. And cash flow continues to move to the upside. Now, what are they doing with that cash flow? Are they buying back shares? They are, in a pretty material way. So that's also sparking this increase in the earnings expectations because, they're removing shares from the market. That increases your earnings per share that are out there. And so they're manufacturing some growth on that front, despite modest revenue growth. Overall, I definitely like the valuation here better than like a Pinterest from the last call. The chart is kind of similar, though, in that sense that it's not making, it's not showing relative strength. And that's probably my biggest worry here, along with Pinterest, is that there's just kind of deterioration underneath the surface from a technical perspective. And so it remains in the same boat as Pinterest. Better valuation, more interesting from that standpoint. Once again, still great business, great balance sheet, slower growth than a Pinterest. But I would lean towards this one because of that allocation towards buying back shares and the fact that you're getting a 15% free cash flow yield versus a 5% free cash flow yield. But both of them have to improve from a technical perspective for me to jump on board. You know, I don't want to sit here and wait for another, 20, 30% decline in the stock price just because I think that it's a decent value here. I want to see some improvements technically before I would jump in. So both of these names remain on the bench, but continue to watch for some technical improvement. Thanks for the question. Now let's touch a bit on the consumer. Oh, never mind. We have a live caller. We're gonna talk to Don from Orinda, California. How you doing, Don?
Hi there. Really well. I have a bond that was just called, and so I now have some money I'm going to need to reinvest in some bonds. And mm-hmm. I have another one maturing at the end of July that I'll once again have to deal with the having to reinvest it. Would you recommend going with non-callable bonds as I'm trying to replace these, considering rates may be coming down?
Well, if you have bonds that are callable, they can be replaced if rates drop considerably. Now, the bigger question is, will they have the ability to refinance at lower rates? Just because the Fed cuts rates does not necessarily mean that bond rates on the corporate side will fall commensurately. Remember, that's just the short end. And most bond issuance happens at least 4 years out, maybe 3 to 4 in that range, and oftentimes, 5, 6, 7, 10 years out and beyond. So there's no guarantee that rates on those maturities will fall dramatically, especially if lower Fed funds rate, shall we say, sparks a further decline in the dollar and worries about inflation, et cetera. I could see the yield curve steepening dramatically in that sense. So, I would focus more on, I'd be fine with a callable bond. I don't really have a lot of issues with that because I don't necessarily think that it's going to be something that is a huge risk going forward. Now, it does depend on the name. It depends on what rate it's paying, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if that coupon rate is very high, then yeah, maybe I would avoid a callable note with a high coupon. But if it's around 4 or 5% or so in that range, 6%, I probably wouldn't be too worried about the callable nature of a bond.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you very much. Question for you also. Do you, as KPP, do you have access to different bonds than we do as consumers?
Yeah, we do. So there are different platforms that aggregate the bonds from institutions and bond demand, right, sales and purchases. And so not only do we get access to different bonds than the average retailer has access to, but we often get better prices as well. So we use different platforms or multiple platforms that we can and do use. MarketAxess is a good example. It's one. It's a public company, so you can kind of look that up in KTX. So that's where institutions, once again, aggregate purchases and sales, and you get better pricing on those platforms and better opportunities kind of before the average investor gets it. So simple answer to your question is yes. Is it dramatically more? Is it double, triple, quadruple the size of what the average investor can see? No, not really, but it is considerable.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right. Thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Now let's touch a bit on the consumer, and more specifically, the young consumer. Now, in-store and online purchases for 18 to 24-year-olds, so they're very young, right? In college, just out of college, it fell 13% year over year between January and April, while spending by older cohorts continued to rise. And it's really about, there's two factors here. One is it's very difficult to find a job out of college right now. It's a microcosm of what's happening in the economy. I said this. Companies are not laying off a lot, but the vast majority out there are either very hesitant to hire or on a complete hiring freeze because of the lack of clarity in the business community, in the broader markets. They don't, not only maybe they'd be directly impacted by tariffs, but almost every business is at least indirectly impacted by tariffs. Okay. And so that uncertainty is causing a lot of companies to just not hire. And that's why you're seeing the continuing unemployment claims just continue to rise. And all the hard data, once again, is looking pretty negative. So it's harder for them to get a job. And then student loan payments are also restricting millions of borrowers. Used to be they were on forbearance. And now, as of just a few months ago, they have to pay. And so instead of money going into the economy, it's going to repay these loans. Now, credit card delinquencies have risen to the highest point since before the pandemic and are at the highest for 18 to 29-year-olds. Okay. Now, where have they stopped spending? According to Wells Fargo, categories that have fallen the most, apparel, 11%, accessories, 18%, technology, 14%. That's interesting, you know, cutting digital services like Netflix, etc. And then small appliances, 18%. And Bank of America found that for Gen Z and millennials, so you're talking about those that are in their 20s, 30s, and all the way into early 40s, because millennials go into the early 40s. Between May of 2023 and May of 2025, they're down 1%. Think about that. Think about where the equity markets have gone, asset prices, home prices, etc. It's not benefiting that cohort. And I think this is also kind of accelerating the political divide in the country as well. Because those younger people, generally, they're the ones that are spending more each year, not less. It's usually the older generation. Those that are in retirement, they're the ones that are spending less because they're, you know, their health often doesn't allow them to travel more or, you know, move a lot, right? Most people, when they hit 60, 70 years old, they slow down a little bit. They don't travel as much. They definitely don't move. They don't buy new furniture. Not as much, at least, as younger people who are forming homes, right? Buying new homes, moving into new apartments, you know, traveling with their friends, going to concerts and shows, things like that. Things that a lot of younger people tend to do. But those people, over a two-year period, have actually had negative growth in their spending. Pretty amazing. Now, online sales and accessories, like I said, down dramatically. Certain companies are seeing 30% drops in the first 3 weeks of June. So it's accelerating in this month as well. And there, a lot of them are trading down. So they may be still buying, but they're buying the cheapest as opposed to something that might have been better and more expensive. And one thing they're spending more money on, though, which is interesting, is a lot of people are coming in, especially women, that are trying to do more things at home, right? Dye their hair, do their nails, etc., and trying to save money that way. And then they mess up and they go to a professional to fix it. So that's what's actually been picking up. But the point here is that in general, the system is not working for that cohort. So it's very important to understand that from a long-term perspective, from a political and social cohesion standpoint. And if you're wondering what's going on with the younger generation, it's showing up in the labor statistics, it's showing up in the spending statistics, and it's something I think we all need to think about. Well, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal each and every weekday, and it's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, every day we receive questions from the comments section over on our InvestTalk YouTube channel. And here's one that came in earlier today. Gil Tel Aviv says, hi, Justin and Luke. BJ has been pulled a bit, and I wonder if that's a good chance to pick some more up. Can you please share your thoughts on that? So this is looking at BJ's wholesale, and this is kind of the younger step sibling of Costco, right? And similar type of business that runs warehouses, you know, club warehouses. They have 250 clubs and 186 gas stations in the eastern United States, where Costco, I believe, started on the West Coast. But once again, similar business, kind of consistent earnings, $4.31 expected this year, $4.71 next year. So based on forward-looking earnings, $107 today, you're talking about a mid-20s multiple. $14 billion market cap, so much smaller than Costco. Costco has a $439 billion market cap. And Costco, though, is trading at a lot more expensive levels, 57 times earnings versus BJ's mid-20s. But Costco is more profitable, even though BJ's does have good profitability, return on equity 32%. I like that. And that tends to be relatively consistent. Free cash flow, $285 million on a, once again, $14 billion market cap. Not a whole lot of debt, so very clean balance sheet. I definitely like that. But not a huge free cash flow yield here, only about 2%. That's probably the biggest worry. Enterprise value to EBITDA is around 14%, which is okay. It's not cheap, not expensive. And that's what I would call this. It's not cheap. It's not particularly expensive, but it's also technically, it has been weakening a bit as of late. So that would probably be my biggest worry. Like you said, it's weakening. Let me find you a support level, though. It's probably going to be around this 50-week moving average. Yeah. I would pick it up around $100 per share. Now it's at 107, like I said. So I think there's still a little more downside to go, but I would be buying this on dips. So I like the business. And I like that it's cheaper than Costco. So I'm going to give BJ Wholesale a thumbs up. Now, lastly, let's touch on the foreign direct investment. And this is something that's reported every quarter. And this is about foreign investors in the United States. Not just about those that buy stocks and bonds, because that's been widely discussed, how many foreign investors, especially out of Europe, are pulling back from investing in U.S. equities, U.S. treasuries, et cetera. This actually measures something that is stickier, which is investments in machinery, plants, controlling stakes in businesses, et cetera. These tend to be long-term investments versus just portfolio flows, right? You can go and buy into the S&P or Apple or Amazon or whatever and pull the money out rather easy. But if you go buy a piece of machinery, a plant, a controlling stake in a business, it's not like you can go and sell it tomorrow quickly at reasonable prices. Okay, it takes a while to unload those assets. And that is dropping considerably. In the first quarter, Foreign direct investment fell $52.8 billion, the lowest total since the fourth quarter of 2022. Now, one thing to consider here is this is the first quarter. This is pre-Liberation Day. And, you know, the question is, was this about uncertainty around tariffs, economic policy, etc.? And will this accelerate, or did it accelerate negatively in the second quarter as well? Because that number that came in the first quarter was well below the quarterly averages over the past 10 and 20 years. So not only are foreign investors buying fewer U.S. securities, but they're also directing less capital to the United States, permanent capital. And mainly this is the EU. 45% of foreign direct investment comes from the EU. And we're the largest recipient of foreign direct investment, about 25%. Percent of global investments head to the United States. So very interesting number that came out and something to consider and watch for when it comes out at the end of next quarter or this quarter. And it gives you will give us a better sense of how foreign investors are looking at not just our equities and bonds, but truly investing in America. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, taxes, retirement, and whether it's really all working in this environment, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and schedule a no-cost portfolio review with me or Luke to help bring clarity and confidence to your plan. Just once again, head over to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button. And we thank you for listening to this podcast and radio show, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.